Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Here we are back Friday, Getaway Friday, July the 2nd, 2021, 18 minutes past the hour. We did not get our last question answered. I thought that might be a difficult one. What is the location of the nation's oldest 4th of July parade? I need the city and the state. What is the location of the nation's oldest 4th of July parade? 740-383-9944, and at the end of this hour, we have Zumbezi Bay tickets, Columbus Zoo tickets, and Marion County Fair passes that we are going to draw winners for. Also, don't forget the Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker coming up next hour, 11:10 until 12 p.m., and then the Exchange Club today from 12:10 until 1 p.m., so you will be able to pick up these tickets over the course of the 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock hour today, if you would like to use them today or over the holiday weekend. Oh, maybe this is the answer that we've been waiting for. Let's listen. Go ahead, caller.
Is it Bristol, Rhode Island?
Bristol, Rhode Island. You have got it. Now, is that a Google answer?
Well, yeah, but I thought you'd have gotten. I didn't pay attention.
No, you can Google. That's okay. We won't pen it. You enjoying the show this morning?
Yes.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. So what name do you want us to put down?
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We got it. Another entry. So we'll throw another question out here so we have more to choose from. Maybe the next question will be a little easier. This should be easier. What is the name of the national anthem of the United States of America? What is the name of the national anthem? 740-383-9944. Do you like our national anthem, Mary Ellen?
Well, I'm really used to it.
Well, there are a lot of songs that espouse patriotism. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine on the 4th of July, if I think about it, I'm trying to say it without saying the name, but our national anthem is probably not the one you hear the most.
What's the one? America the Beautiful?
I hear America the Beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hear, for fun, you hear Yankee Doodle in schools. You hear, a lot of people do the pledge. I guess that's not a song, but you hear that, I would say, more than the national anthem.
Oh. Yeah.
I think there are just things. America the Beautiful, though, I've noticed that a lot of events will play that at the beginning as opposed to the national anthem.
You know what I noticed when I was on a border state around the United States, that they were more revved up when they sang the Star-Spangled Banner. It was very noticeable, like if I was in Florida or California or Maine, or they really were much more involved
into
in
it.
Singing.
Yeah. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, it's a Star-Spangled Banner.
Star-Spangled Banner, you have got it. What is your name?
Brenda Griffith.
All right, Brenda, you are in the competition. We're going to draw here in about 40 minutes. Stay tuned.
Okay.
Thank you, Brenda. All right, let's get another question out here quickly here. Learn our American history. Who gave us the Statue of Liberty? Yeah. Who did that? 740-383-9944. Who gave us the Statue of Liberty? Give us a call, 740-383-9944. Before we do the Declaration of Independence, Mary Ellen, do you have another recipe for us?
Oh, sure. Yes. I'm going to do the gumdrop bars.
Good.
Okay. 4 eggs beaten well, 1 tablespoon water, 2 cups light brown sugar, 2 cups flour, 1/2 cup chopped nuts, 1 cup gumdrops, not spice, chopped, salt, mix in order given. Bake it for 30 minutes in a 350 oven put in a well-greased and floured baking pan. And then, while it's still hot, you frost it with 2 tablespoons orange juice, 2 tablespoons butter, and enough powdered sugar to spread. And then you cut them in bars.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, they are. They're really good.
Now, when's the last time you've made those, Mary Ellen?
Boy, it's been a long time.
Well, next time you make them, invite me over.
I'm seriously trying to think of maybe making them very shortly here.
Oh, that sounds good. I would enjoy that. We've got a phone call. Go ahead, caller.
France,
you have got it. And, you know, we've been bailing them out ever since we got that thing, time after time after time. Who do we have on the line?
Trish.
Oh, Trish, good to talk with you again. All right, thank you, Trish.
You're welcome.
Yep, let's do one more question here. These are pretty easy questions. Well, this might not be an easy one. What was the Statue of Liberty's official name? It's not the Statue of Liberty. That's what we call it. But it did have an official name. Does anybody know what it is? What is the Statue of Liberty's official name? And there's one more question I want to get in this morning. So as soon as we get this question answered, we'll ask that one. And then we will go into the Declaration of Independence. I believe we have one more speech from President Harding. And we have all these things to give away. You know, the 4th of July is different than Memorial Day and Flag Day and Labor Day and all these days that it somewhat celebrate patriotism. What is it? Well, let's take this call. Well, maybe somebody smarter than I think they are. They're going to get this. Go ahead, caller.
Was it Lady Liberty?
Not Lady Liberty, but a good guess. I think that's a nickname for her. But what we're looking for is the official name. Now, I really don't know what this means, to be honest. I don't know if the French called it this or we called it this when we got it. I'm not sure. But what was the Statue of Liberty's official name? That's what we're looking for here. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's Liberty Enlightening the World.
Liberty Enlightening the World. That is the official name of the Statue of Liberty. All right, is this Brenda again?
Yes, it is.
You're in, Brenda. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
A lot of history buffs out there this morning. Now, there's one more that I want to get in because I did not know this piece of history, and I find this sort of fascinating. Where is it here? Okay. Oh, this is good. And this is right up Mary Ellen's alley, too. During World War II, where did the Declaration of Independence get stored? Does anybody know that? That's an interesting one. I had no idea about this. It was not on display. Where during World War II did the Declaration of Independence get stored? And it would have a tie-in to Mary Ellen Withrow.
At Treasury.
Not Treasury, but this, it would have a tie-in. This is interesting. Do you know President Harding?
Mm-hmm.
No. Very interesting. During World War II, where was the Declaration of Independence stored? And we will figure that out as we go along here. Well, how about this, President Harding? We'll go to you for the speech this time, and then we'll go to the Declaration of Independence as our final speech for the day.
Well, one of the key things that really helped build my political career was being on the Chautauqua speech circuit, understanding that in the early part of the 1900s, the Chautauqua movement was gaining a lot of momentum. And the idea was that communities would have a place, a pavilion where local citizens could attend, and speakers would regularly come in and give informative lectures and all kinds of educational presentations, and it was just enlightenment. It was entertainment. It was fun.
Could you give me 1 second, President Harding? I want to take this call. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning. I read this someplace once. I'm not sure I read it correctly, but wasn't it Fort Knox?
Fort Knox.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that next, and then you started, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, mm-hmm. Now, Fort Knox, now isn't that interesting? I did not know that until this morning.
That was under my responsibility.
Hey, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How are you enjoying the show this morning?
Well, I'm enjoying it. I have to say good morning to Mary Ellen, and of course I have to say good morning to President Harding, and ask President Harding if he's going to be home this afternoon, because I need to call him about something for the Historical Society.
President Harding, will you be home this afternoon?
Yes, I'll be at, I'm not going to be at my home, because I rented it to Millard Hunt when I left for Washington. So I'll be staying with my father this afternoon at his home on Center Street. But
yes, tell him I have that number, so I'll be able to contact him there.
You know, we'll have to send a copy of this over to the Historical Society this morning.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. Yeah. Enjoying it.
Well, thank you.
Happy 4th of July to all of you, especially to Mary Ellen and to President Harding.
Thank you.
I will continue to listen, and hopefully I can learn something.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Fort Knox. How about that, Mary Ellen?
Yes.
Before we go back to President Harding, tell us about Fort Knox. A lot of people are interested in that.
Well, it's pretty hard to get in there, I might say.
That's what I hear.
Yes, they wouldn't let Norman in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they said, you know, that the spouse can't come in. And they don't take people through very often, because they scratch. They have to scratch a little bit off of a brick in each room, which they don't like to do. But there's a group that go with you. I mean, different people that have been that are in government. And it's a wonderful place. I mean, it's nothing but gold bars in there. And I guess, you know, at West Point, there's also a lot of gold bars, because that's where I had my picture taken. You can't take pictures in Fort Knox, but you can in West Point.
For people who don't know, where is Fort Knox?
Well, it's, where is it? You're asking me, and I can't remember.
It's that secret. If they really have it hidden, it is not.
Well, it's out there all by itself.
I bet. Yeah.
But, you know, they were so smart to put it in with the military. They did that with West Point, and they did it with Fort Knox. And is it in Virginia?
President Harding, do you know where Fort Knox is?
No, I've never been associated with it.
Wait, was Fort Knox around in the 1920s?
I can't answer that, but I think it would have been, you know.
Huh. Were you much interested in money, President Harding?
Well, no. As I had mentioned earlier, I'm not a numbers person. I'm not good at it. I always relied on Florence to be the monetary brains behind anything that I was involved in. I have great respect for it, for money, but it's not an important part of my life.
Here comes a speech from President Harding.
Well, I was mentioning the Chautauqua Circuit, and I had been invited to be a presenter on the Chautauqua Circuit, and I had the great opportunity to give speeches throughout the Midwest in Chautauqua pavilions, in small towns and big cities. And, you know, one of the most popular Chautauqua speeches, and this is the one that people ask me about, was my speech on Alexander Hamilton, which, as you all know, is my hero in politics. So I did a speech, which I performed many times, and I've got a little piece of it to deliver for you today. As we gather today, this lecture is a tribute to one of the outstanding founders of the Republic. In the appraisal of constructive contribution to the making of our America, Alexander Hamilton stands foremost and merits our most reverent honor for all time. You see, Hamilton was the inspiring and insistent advocate of union and the creative genius in the making of the Constitution. as well as the practical politician who brought about its necessary adoption. To pay him this tribute takes nothing away from our other founding fathers. Washington riveted the confidence of the new possessors of independence. Jefferson was the foremost advocate of democracy. Franklin was a philosopher in making of the Constitution. But Hamilton had the conception of a federal government upon which plan the American people have builded to their own satisfaction and to no small degree the astonishment of the world. When his plan was adopted, he became the master builder, and the integrity of the nation's financial honor is his monument for the ages. The task of the founders was no trivial one, and the piloting of this new ship of state demanded heroic leadership. Here was the very chaos of victory. The triumphant colonists were spent, they were wearied, they were financially exhausted. They didn't have plans for the future, and they had little thought of what would be the nation. Nationality was not the inspiration of the war for independence, but nationality was revealed as the necessary means of self-preservation once independence was won. There were many conflicting ideas, even more pronounced than today. There were varying conditions throughout the colonies, now turned into states. There were opposing ambitions. There were pronounced envies, threatening jealousies, menacing suspicions. And Hamilton combated them all with that boundless faith which is born of constructive genius, and made a supreme contribution to the formation and the inauguration of the new republic, which he believed to be destined as the exemplar of representative democracy. Many proclaimed him a monarchist and the foe of liberty. Others thought him an imperialist and the enemy of democracy, but he was none of these. It was from Hamilton's lips that came the finest utterance ever made concerning human liberty. And I quote, "The sacred rights of mankind are written as with a sunbeam by the hand of divinity itself, never to be erased or obscured by mortal power." In all the criticism of him, and there was intensity of criticism and maddening bitterness of controversy in those days, his sincerity was never questioned. As a believer in the highest degree of liberty, he was eager for a nation strong enough to guarantee the security of liberty. One wonders sometimes that this outstanding leader and conspicuous contributor should be so relatively inconspicuous in the history of our country. He was not a popular hero in his time. He cared little for the favor of others, but he put the common welfare of the nation above all else. And the world needs that type of leadership today. But I choose to stress the rugged honesty of this patriot statesman, because honesty will cure 10,000 ills of today. Honesty of leadership will spare us misconceptions which menace democracy. Honesty among nations will dissolve their differences, so that new and lasting friendships may be bound by the ties of fraternity and mutual trust. Alexander Hamilton had the vision to foresee the expanding republic. Born in Europe, he was an American by adoption, but he fought his way to the loftiest plane of citizenship and all its obligations. He was a youthful zealot for liberty and a distinguished soldier of the Revolution. The transcending qualities of his statesmanship so obscured his military career that it's little noted, though standing alone, his military service would command a place in history. He was literally a founder and a builder. Washington had learned his qualities in war, and in Washington's trust, he became the master builder. Yes, he was more than founder or builder. He was the prophet of America's destiny. That insight and foresight made him understand why other republics had failed and faded from memory. He sought to guard against the dangers of his day, and he gave warning against the dangers to come. Human nature does not change from one century to another, and the fallacies which Hamilton combated in his day have yet to be met in ours. None ever wielded a sharper pen. No heart and mind ever directed a more eloquent tongue. It was his conviction that federal powers could combat menaces which individual states could not successfully contend. In his clarion call for social and political integration under the Constitution, warned about the danger of factions. And again, I quote, "By a faction, I understand the number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or a minority of the whole, who are united and actuated by some common impulse of passion or interest adverse to the rights of other citizens or to the aggregate interests of the entire community." Can any student of our times in America or world doubt for a moment that factionalism is developing as never before? We have our factions which seek to promote this or that interest without regard to the relationship to others and without regard for the common good. We have the factions of hatred and prejudice, violence. We have factions which would invade the constitutional rights of others or subvert the Constitution itself. We have factions challenging both civil and religious liberty. No nation will survive where this factionalism is endured. If we carry on visualizing the nation of which he dreamed, if we will maintain a national viewpoint and emphasize the interwovenness of all of our activities, interdependent, where none may permanently prosper without a prosperous whole, if we will be as hopefully American and as wholeheartedly American as our founders were in the beginning, our future will be secure. These we must do, no matter what political sacrifices are necessary along the way. I offer memorial to a great lover of liberty, a great patriot, a great soldier, a colossal statesman, a mighty American. Time has brought our understanding of him out of the mists of history and given us a measure of his true greatness. If I were to select one attribute above all others for the inspiration of the Americans of today and tomorrow, it would not be his brilliance of mind, or his gift of eloquence, or his matchless genius, not even his prophetic vision. But I commend his courage of patriotism, which put his devotion to the Republic's welfare before popular approval or personal fortune, and his unconstitutional gift of heart, mind, and soul to the making of an imperishable temple of freedom in these United States.
Very, very nice. Thank you, President Harding. It's an interesting speech, Mary Ellen.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. We did get a call there. If you have a question, give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Before Mary Ellen does the Declaration of Independence, I am going to maybe we'll ask one more question here.
Did we find out where Fort Knox
is? Oh, no, we've got to find out where Fort Knox is.
It really bothers me that I can't
remember.
That
should be a trivia question. Where is Fort Knox? Let me take a look here. Knoxville, Tennessee. That's right. It's right down there in Knoxville. Okay, I'm going to throw out the trivia question, then I'm going to get this. Okay. Now, this is in millions, and if you come close, I'll give it to you. What was the estimated population of the United States on July 4th, 1776? Go ahead, caller.
Hey, you guys want to know where Fort Knox is at?
Oh, yeah, tell us where Fort Knox is.
About 50 years ago when I was down to Kentucky in the service, it was still there. Now, I wouldn't guarantee it today, but Fort Knox is where I know it to be.
Oh, Kentucky. Well, I appreciate that information. Thank you.
Yeah,
that was a basic training outfit down there at the time.
I can't remember everything.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Fort Knox. Well, one of us had it out there. Fort Knox is in Kentucky.
Yes. How about that?
How about that?
You know, when I would give a speech, I would say where all the mints were except Fort Knox, and that's the reason I couldn't remember it.
Because you can't.
Where it was,
Why is it so, people could look it up now. Why is it such a secret?
Well, they don't want anybody around.
I mean, is that one of those places, like, shoot to kill if you get close?
Oh, I think they're pretty serious about
it. They can take care of it, yeah. Let's take the phone call here. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a 2.5 million.
2.5 million people. Mm. You have got it. Thank you, caller.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, can you believe that? I think people think it as being much smaller mm-hmm. at that time, but the estimated population of the United States on July 4th, 1776 was 2.5 million people. Mm-hmm. So not a small country by any means. Okay, Mary Ellen, the Declaration of Independence.
Okay.
Here we go. I know. Take a deep breath before this one. It's a mammoth thing.
I hope I can get through this.
All right.
Yeah. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shewn, I like that word, shoon, that's unusual, that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to prove new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly, for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such disillusions, to cause others, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt out towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun, with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity. We have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and of sanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation, and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states. that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Very, very nice. The Declaration of Independence. If you want to sign and date that for us, Mary Ellen, now we can put that into law. we'll send that over to Fort Knox down in Kentucky. Very nice. When you hear that, President Harding, what's it make you think about?
It sounds like a prosecutor before a judge submitting a list of charges against a defendant. Very carefully thought out, very methodical, so that a judge and jury could rule on that. Very prosecutorial. I heard it in a new way with Mary Ellen's reading, at how specific the charges were against the Crown.
You know, and I think it is apt, not for nothing, here in the city of President Harding, and befitting the 100th anniversary of President Harding's first year in inauguration, to have, and also, what is it now, 101 years that women have had the right to vote, to have Mary Ellen read that here on our 4th of July special program. Mary Ellen, as you read that, what does it fill you with?
Well, how much they disliked Great Britain. And, you know, the other day I heard them said that Canada celebrates their freedom on July 1st. And I thought, well, they didn't have any trouble. They didn't have a war. We had a horrible war and a lot of stress. Do you know anything about when Canada became free?
I don't think it was anything like it was here.
No, I mean, I just didn't know anything about it. I mean, I think they still use their money.
I think that one of the things going on here, particularly at that time, the late 1700s, this land at that time, the 13 colonies, was very profitable.
Oh, yes. That was it. Everybody wanted it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to money.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And but, you know, the truth is what makes the United States of America maybe more amazing than anything else is they shouldn't have won that war. By any means, they should not.
When you read the book, I forget who wrote it. What's the guy's name?
McCullough.
There? Yeah.
Yep.
It was a wonderful book. I said, I don't see how they won that war. They didn't have shoes on, hardly. And, you know, they didn't have food, and they just had awful situation.
It was, and of the story of America, and then also putting the Constitution together, they could not agree. There was a mess going on there in regard to that. And in some degree, we can't get into it now, but that's why the Bill of Rights was added, people think that was very important. It really wasn't. It was just to appease some people who weren't going to vote for it, did not like the idea of the federal government taxing people, was really how we got the Bill of Rights. Which a lot, you know, the Bill of Rights have become very... Why do you think, President Harding, the Bill of Rights have become so important to us, when in the beginning it was just an appeasement by Madison and Washington to get the votes to get this thing passed?
You know, the idea of individual liberties, individual rights, is central to the American psyche. It's part of our spirit of independence. And having those rights codified in a document that is an addendum to the Constitution makes them real. And it just brings more importance to it every year.
We better draw for the free stuff. But a number between 1 and 12, Mary Ellen. Now, this will be for the Columbus Zoo tickets.
9.
9. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It looks like, Trish, you have won the tickets to the Columbus Zoo. Trish, I'll set these over to the side for you. You can pick them up before 1 o'clock today, or you can get them next week. Okay, for the Zumbezi Bay passes, President Harding, a number between 1 and 12.
Well, I was elected to a 4-year term, so let's go with 4.
Number 4, that would go to Mary. Mary, you have got the Zumbezi Bay passes. So Mary's got Zumbezi Bay. Trish has got the Columbus Zoo. Now we've got the Marion County Fair passes, which you probably will want to pick these up today before 1 o'clock, because it will be all over. Tomorrow's the last day. Mary Ellen, give me a number.
Oh, 7.
7. 7 for the Marion County Fair. Looks like Ryan has got the Marion County Fair passes. So Trish, Mary, and Ryan, you've got till 1 o'clock today. Come in anytime and pick those up. And as we wrap up this portion of the program, we'll kind of end where we started. The 4th of July, if you had to wrap it all up in one word, what would it be, President Harding?
Honesty.
Honesty. Mary Ellen, one word. 4th of July, Independence Day.
Oh, happiness.
And we hope everybody has a safe and happy holiday. Go out and celebrate the way you want, but be safe in doing so. And maybe, in between the fireworks and the parties, just Google or read or pull up something on these people who went through a lot. It would have been death.
Oh. Yeah.
For them,
yeah.
Had they lost that war. So it really was independence. President Harding, any plans for the 4th?
I'm headed back to Washington. I've been here in Marion with Florence only a few days, so we'll be taking the train back to Washington this evening.
Mary Ellen, plans for the 4th?
Yes, with you.
Absolutely. We spend the holidays together.
Yes, we have a lot of fun. Yes, we do.
We have a lot of fun. So we're going to have a big celebration on the 4th, and we'll look forward to that. Remember, the pastor spot is coming up next. Pastor Steve Whitaker from 11 to 12 and Exchange Club from 12 to 1. So don't you dare go anywhere.
And that I do an interview with. I really like to do them.
Well, and may it continue. We're not going to stop at 10 years. We're going to go on into the next years. What do you make of his opponent?
Now you're trying to get me in trouble.
No,
yes,
no.
You are. You're trying to get me in trouble. you're baiting me.
No. We can move around that question. We can move around that.